Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program which is devoted to what is either the fastest growing segment of our society or the realization that we won't long have a society. Because if there's not more of you who have come to know what I have been sharing on this program, that our political and religious institutions, our military invasions, and our economic schemes are the problem. They are not the solution. We cannot prevail by restacking the chairs on this Titanic. We will not prevail by kicking the bums out. The problem is our government. They are not the solution for anything that ails us. They are the cause. Many of us, and hopefully it is a growing majority of us, have finally come to realize that these institutions are manipulating events for their own interest and against the common good. And so, as part of this program, we're not simply going to present the news. We're going to hold those individuals accountable. Our mission is to understand who is causing the tragedies that are besieging our world, where they're trying to take this world, and what we can do personally, individually, and with our families to keep them from harming us. And that's why in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through something that most people don't think of when the subject is God. We're going to use evidence and reason. Since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the lone source of hope in our exceedingly troubled world. Words, wisely wielded, provide the answer for everything that ails us. From economic ruin to terrorism, from religious myths to political hypocrisy. So we hope that you will wield yours and join us in this program. Anytime over the next 2 hours, you can call us toll-free, 877-300-7645. I'd like to begin today's program with a clip from John McClown. You probably know him as John McCain. I know him personally. I've been to his office adjacent to the U.S. Congress, his senatorial office. Spent considerably time with him there. I have flown him in my airplane and had the chance to chat with him between campaign stops. I've had him in my home. Those are all mistakes. I was once political. I am no longer political. I entertained John McCain during a time immediately after having met George W. Bush, before George W. Bush was first elected president in his first term. He was running against John McCain. In fact, during the time that I met with McCain, it was McCain who had all the momentum. And we'll speak in a moment as to how John McCain lost his momentum and why I was with him. You see, first I spent a day with George W. Bush in the governor's mansion in Texas. And I was horrified by what I heard during that meeting. It was just myself, a friend of mine at the time, Jerry Falwell, Karl Rove, and George W. Bush. And I asked him why he wanted to be president. What did he think that he was going to bring to the Oval Office that made it worth the investment of campaigners' donations and his time? And why did he want to be president? What was he going to accomplish? What did he bring to the party? And his answer horrified me. He spoke of wanting to be a crisis president, wanting to show that under crisis that he would be exemplary. He talked about wanting to be a wartime president. America wasn't at war at the time. But we sure were at war almost immediately after he took the oath of office. I knew what he was going to do because he told me before he was elected president, and he did it. Of course, he engaged in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, both based on lies. A million people died. America's children lost their country, $6 trillion. Over 10,000 Americans were killed. Was never impeached on murder, but he should have been. So I had dinner around this, right after this meeting, around this time, within a week or two of the meeting with George W. Bush, with Henry Kissinger. And I quizzed Henry Kissinger on the times that we were in. Now, this dinner was also a small, intimate affair. There was only four of us at the dinner table. And we talked about the various individuals that were running for president at the time. And the subject of John McCain came up. And old Henry, well, boy, he was strongly in favor of John McCain. Shouldn't have been surprised now, based on what I've learned about Henry Kissinger in the interim. So I reached out to John McCain. It's embarrassing. When I hear him speak now, I cringe. I spent much of my life on the wrong side of so many issues. I was once a Christian. I was once a Republican. I was once an economic conservative. I was once a hawk and pro-military. I was once a patriot. I am none of those things now because I have learned that they are all wrong. I hope that there are more of you who will join me as we peel back the onion that is this government of the United States. So with that, Scott, would you please play the first portion of this clip, which is from John McClown.
Fox News alert, you just heard Laura Ingraham, who echoes many Republicans, say Senator John McCain is flip-flopping on his support for President Obama. Senator McCain is here right now. He joins us live from Washington, D.C. Good morning to you, sir.
I'm sorry I didn't hear that section of that program.
She feels as though you're bailing him out, a misguided, confused policy. Now when you come out to the microphones and say, hey, we got to support this, that people can't understand where that came from.
Well, first of all, I didn't say, hey, we got to support this. Second of all, I said I was encouraged when the president commits to increasing our support for the Free Syrian Army, providing them with the weapons that they need to combat Bashar Assad and to degrade the capabilities of the Syrians to deliver these chemical weapons and other weapons. That cannot be anything but encouraging. But I've said I've got to see the details. I've got to see what's going to happen. And I will not sign on to a resolution that doesn't say that that's going to happen. I'm very worried about just one of these cosmetic kind of resolutions. So I just beg to differ. I'm sure that with her vast knowledge of military tactics and strategy, she knows better than me.
That's not the last we're going to hear from John McClown this morning. One of the things I like to do as I'm examining people, particularly when they're talking, and I know that does not work on this particular forum, is to look at their facial expressions. John McCain was condescending. Of course, his comments, vast knowledge of the strategy of military operations being superior to his. Speaking of Laura Ingraham, who made an accurate statement, is, of course, part of that condescending nature. Of course, John McCain almost flunked out of the Naval Academy. He was twice brought up on charges that should have booted him out of the Navy for his reckless behavior. And he spent the vast preponderance of his military career in a prison cell in the Hanoi Hilton. That does not exactly make one an expert on military strategy.
It comes across a lot more in the next few clips. He begins to get more and more condescending towards the two gentlemen interviewing him.
Yeah, the two most condescending individuals in America today are John McClown and Obozo, our president. And excuse me if I'm using derogatory slang terms here for these clowns, but they deserve it. I mean, the time that Americans respect their government officials or respect the office of senator or respect the office of president, we need to get beyond that. These people are liars. They're disgusting. They're duplicitous. They're destructive. They're doing everything in their power to empower themselves and to harm the U.S. citizens. Now, he says, I want to give the Syrian rebels the weapons that they need. We've been doing that. Now, he's going to, in a later state that no American weapon has come into the rebels' hands. That is absolutely and completely untrue. The United States has manufactured most of the weapons that are in the rebels' hands. And we've supplied those weapons to Qatar, to the United Arab Emirates, and to Saudi Arabia, who in turn have given them to the rebels. And one of the things that the United States does is that it manufactures AK-47s. I think we're the largest manufacturer of AK-47s in the world. And we also manufacture Russian-style surface-to-air missiles and rocket-propelled grenades for the express purpose of creating the illusion that they didn't come from us. But when you see the rebels armed to the teeth with 50-caliber machine guns, with AK-47s, with rocket launchers, with rocket-propelled grenades, with anti-tank weapons, with surface-to-air missiles, they didn't come from the Russians. The Russians are supporting the other side. We know exactly who they came from and how they got there. From the United States, purchased by Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia, and that's how they were sent there. Now, the weapons that they need. These are individuals who are trying to overthrow their government through armed conflict. That's who they are. Most of them aren't even trying to overthrow their own government. A huge percentage of the jihadists are from other countries, from Iraq, from Libya, from Egypt, from Somalia, from the Sudan, from Yemen, from Saudi Arabia, from Turkey. A huge percentage of them. And so what we're doing is we're supplying weapons to the same jihadists that we say we're fighting a war on terror against in Afghanistan. The same jihadists that are controlled by the Taliban that we're sending drones to kill in Pakistan, here we're arming in Syria. And McClown wants us to send ever more weapons to them. A press clip on Fox News of Senator John McClown talking about the fact that he doesn't want a cosmetic type of a resolution for a declaration of war against Syria. A cosmetic type of declaration. What, we're going to smother you with lipstick? We're going to put mascara on you. That is our idea. I know our cruise missiles. In the past, we've had explosive warheads. We don't want to use explosive warheads anymore. We're going to fill them with mascara. That way, you're going to know that we did this to you. Come on, John McClown. Let's play the next part of this clip because it gets far worse.
There's an item in the Wall Street Journal today that talks a little bit about how, you know, even though the White House authorized, arming some of the moderate fighters, they're still waiting for a rifle. They're still waiting for bullets and stuff like that.
Or an MRE.
It looks like the plan was, let's look like we're doing something, but let's not do anything. Let's just see how this all plays out. People are dying over there.
Absolutely. And while we dither here and Congress stays out of session, the massacre goes on. I've been so disappointed and angry because, as you know, I've been in Syria. I know the Free Syrian Army. They're brave people, and they're being massacred by arms that are flowing in by air from their sponsor, Iran and Russia, and it's an unfair fight. They're fighting tanks with AK-47s. Yeah, and so that's why I said, I'd like to see what that plan is, and I'd like to see it done. And you are right. Not one single weapon supplied by the United States of America has reached the hands of the Free Syrian Army. And by the way, we know who they are. They are the most effective fighting force, and we can get the weapons to the right people. I know that.
All right. Let's talk about this. That the first McCain begins the segment by laughing at his criticism of Laura Ingraham presenting himself as the vast reservoir of military strategy. Now, this same John McCain thought it was a swell idea for us to invade Afghanistan. And now, 12 years later, we've lost thousands of American lives. We've squandered American coin, and we've made a bad situation worse. Nice job, John McCain. You are obviously a great strategist. He was the biggest cheerleader for the invasion of Iraq, where we went in, gave a country that was the enemy of Iran to Iran, broke that country, ushered in al-Qaeda that hadn't been there previously, and left a country an absolute mess, making the world unbelievably more dangerous now, giving Iraq to Iran. Nice strategic move, John McCain. John McCain, if you recall, was the biggest cheerleader of America bombing Muammar Gaddafi so that the jihadists we were fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan could take control of that country. That turned around to bite us because now Libya, as a Islamic terrorist government, is the largest supplier of weapons to fellow terrorists throughout the Middle East, in addition to the fact they used those weapons to kill our ambassador and three others. Nicely done, John McCain. You are my strategy hero. And now what does he want? He is the biggest cheerleader for us arming the Syrian rebels and for America engaging in that war. Yes, your last military adventures, they worked out so well, didn't they, John? And it wasn't it John McCain that constantly met with the Muslim Brotherhood and was talking about how wonderful they were? Isn't it the Muslim Brotherhood that wanted to enter the great jihad in Syria? And when the Muslim Brotherhood announced that they wanted, as a religious crusade, to engage in that war and to slaughter every Shia as if they were an infidel, that the Muslim Brotherhood that John McCain so warmly embraced was finally overturned. Yes, this is our John McCain. So he says they're still waiting for rifles, and isn't that terrible? Yes, nothing brings peace to a country like arming both sides. That's what we did in Iraq. Before we left, we not only armed the Shias, but we provided through the Awakening Program the very weapons that are being used now in Syria to the Sunni jihadists. He says people are dying on there. There's a massacre going on. Do you know that no one has even made an attempt to determine what percentage of the 110,000 people that have been killed by the government versus the rebels? Most of the large killings have been suicide bombings. But no one has a clue as to what percentage have been killed by one side or another. This is a civil war. It's very much like the American Civil War in the sense that you've got neighbors, brothers, family members waging war, armed conflict with one another. And yet the United States has decided that the opposition, the jihadists, the fundamentalist Sunni Muslims are the good guys, and the government of that country that's trying to stay in power are the bad guys. We'll return to that and more thoughts about all of this in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There's a couple of other comments Senator John McClown made during that segment that I do want to comment on. He said that they are fighting tanks with AK-47s. He knows that to be absolutely untrue, and so do you if you've listened to this program. The Saudi Arabians came to recognize, as did the Qataris, that the battle had been lost. The Syrian civil war was all but over. Every engagement for the last 3 or 4 months had been one-sided. And so it was about to be brought to a close, and the Saudi Arabians and the Qataris decided they needed to up the ante, and they forced Jordan to allow them to truck surface-to-air missiles and anti-tank weapons into Syria and to give them to al-Nusra Front. And so they're fighting tanks with anti-tank weapons. Now, there's a reason that the Syrian army is no longer driving tanks through the strongholds of the rebels, and that is because the rebels aren't shooting AK-47s at them. They're shooting anti-tank weapons at them. There's a reason that the Syrians are not flying bombing missions, because now they're armed with surface-to-air missiles, thanks to Saudi Arabia. He then said that that we know who these people are, and we can get the weapons to the right people. The dominant force, and you don't have to be an expert. You don't even have to spend any time. You know, I'm telling you that in 5 minutes of literally 5 minutes, if you were to Google the rebels in Syria, what you would find after 5 minutes' time is that the rebels, the dominant force of the rebels in Syria, I mean, overwhelmingly dominant, is the al-Nusra Front. It means the Victory Front. And it is a terrorist organization, according even to the United States government. The al-Nusra Front was created initially out of the Awakening Movement in Iraq, and the Sunnis in Iraq that were the force behind the Awakening Movement that the United States armed, labeled themselves the Islamic State of Iraq. The United States liked to call them Al-Qaeda in Iraq, even though their organization was known as the Islamic State in Iraq. About 6 months ago, the Islamic State in Iraq, which is the one that's perpetrating all the suicide bombings, they've killed 6,000 Iraqis with suicide bombs thus far this year. It doesn't seem to bother the moral conscience of America, however. They announced what was obvious, that the al-Nusra Front was an outgrowth of the Islamic State of Iraq, which America calls al-Qaeda. And the al-Nusra Front chieftain said, yeah, there's some truth to that, but, you know, we don't think of ourselves as taking orders from them. You know, we view ourselves as being loyal to al-Zawahiri. Al-Zawahiri was the number two person of al-Qaeda for the last 10 to 15 years. He is now the number one person in al-Qaeda because we killed Osama bin Laden. That's the al-Nusra Front. Al-Nusra Front chieftains are shown cutting off the heads of Catholic priests because Catholic priests were trying to protect nuns from being raped by them. They have raped an estimated 100,000 women in this Syrian conflict. They are fundamentalist jihadists. Now, with that identification and John McClown's comments fully repudiated, let's let John McClown dig himself in even further.
I know you met with General Idris, who is a defector from the Syrian army, who's come out. Some say that he does have tie to Muslim extremists. I don't know. Well, listen to this video, Senator McCain, of a Syrian, it looks like a fighter jet being shot out of the sky. Listen to what they say afterwards. I have a problem helping those people out after screaming that after a hit.
Would you have a problem with American and Christians saying, thank God, thank God? That's what they're saying. Come on. Of course they are Muslims, but they are moderates, and I guarantee you that they are moderates. I know them, and I've been with them. For someone to say Allah Akbar is about as offensive as someone saying, thank God.
You know, there are times when it is difficult to show restraint. This is one of those times. First of all, some say that he has ties to Islamic extremists. There's no such thing as an Islamic extremist. There are Islamic fundamentalists. The Islamic terrorists who flew planes into our buildings on 9/11 were Islamic fundamentalists. They were not extremists. They were living Islam exactly as Muhammad ordered them to live Islam. It is impossible to be a good Muslim as defined in the Quran and not be a terrorist. I've proved that in Prophet of Doom. You can read it if you think that conclusion is an opinion. If you read the Islamic scriptures, if you read the Hadith and the Quran, you will find that Muhammad was a ruthless terrorist. He led 75 terrorist raids. That his primary means of spreading Islam was through terrorism. The Quran orders Muslims to behave like Muhammad and to follow Muhammad's orders, and Muhammad and Allah both ordered Muslims to engage in jihad. And jihad is always defined as fighting in Allah's cause and killing peaceful Muslims and non-Muslims. when that plane was shot out of the sky, it was not shot out of the sky with AK-47s, Mr. McClown. No, Senator McClown, it was shot out of the sky with surface-to-air missiles. Now, let's turn to the main issue here.
Well,
yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I have a thought here. If you shoot a plane out of the sky...
this is a jet. This is a Syrian MiG.
Okay.
I mean, a Russian MiG.
Okay, let's say you shoot someone.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, somebody died there. If it got shot out of the sky, do you then praise God? Is that what you do? is that your first reaction? Oh man, I just got in a car accident. Thank God.
Yeah, every time that Muslims commit an act of terrorism, without exception, they scream Allahu Akbar. Anytime that a Muslim is in the process of killing, they scream Allahu Akbar. Now, let's first realize that the al-Nusra front that shot down the Syrian jet was not shooting down the Syrian jet firing AK-47s. They were firing surface-to-air missiles, making old John McCain a liar. Now, when the commentator says, I have a problem with somebody screaming Allahu Akbar, because guess what happened on 9/11? On those voice recorders, all you hear screamed into the voice recorders are Allahu Akbar. It was a confession. Mr. McCain would say that Allahu Akbar is the same as saying thank God. That is all that they are saying. Of course they're Muslims, but they're just saying thank God. It's only as offensive as saying thank God. Well, let me tell you something there, Senator John McClown. I know a little bit about Allahu Akbar. It does not mean thank God. It means Allah is most great. Allah is the greatest. Allah is greater. It is known as the Islamic prayer of fear. It was first conceived by Muhammad after he had annihilated the first three Jewish communities in Yathrib, today's Medina. Systematically, he expelled the first, stealing their possessions. He murdered those that were part of the second Jewish community, enslaving their children, raping their women. And the third, he systematically cut off 900 heads of the men right in front of him, one at a time, sawing off their heads, just as Muslims do today. Then had a lottery game so that his mujahideen could pick which Jewish woman they wanted to rape, and then he enslaved all of the children. Well, the first community that he just banished out to the desert to die reformed in a community called Kabar. Kabar was a Jewish farming community. They had no weapons, they had no military, they had no police, they had no defenses. Muhammad went down with the first Muslims who were barbarians. They were jihadists. They were ruthless. They had just come back from surrendering at Mecca. Muhammad got cold feet, did not think he had sufficient weapons to conquer Mecca, signed a 10-year peace treaty, which he violated the following year, and got authorization from his gods to do so in the ninth surah. And on the way back, his jihadists had bloodlust. His jihadist, who had expected a great spoil by plundering Mecca, turned on Muhammad, and Muhammad said, I need easy prey. Otherwise, my jihadists are going to have turned on me. And he went to Kabar directly. And the morning of the raid, you had Muhammad with thousands of the first Muslims armed to the teeth, surrounding and prepared to attack as terrorists the civilian community of Kabar. And so what Muhammad did is he ordered his jihadist to yell to the Jews, Allahu Akbar, which is to say, Allah is greater than your God. Well, the God of the Jews, the God of Abraham, of Yishak, and of Jacob, is Yahweh. Muhammad wanted the Jews to know that I'm going to prove to you that my God, Allah, is greater than Yahweh, because I'm going to pummel you. I'm going to terrorize you. And his goons, over the course of days, killed every man, torturing many of them. They raped the women, with Muhammad getting first pick. He raped the leader of that community's wife after killing her husband, after killing her father, and they enslaved the Jewish children. Allahu Akbar is the Islamic prayer of fear. It was ordered by Muhammad to be yelled while committing acts of terrorism, and it has been yelled by Muslims committing acts of terrorism ever since. When we have idiots in charge of the United States military and the United States government who make statements like John McClown did yesterday, saying that screaming Allahu Akbar is the same as saying, thank God, that is all they are saying. We are so lost, you cannot fix this problem by throwing the bums out. You can't fix this problem by replacing Democrats with Republicans or with Republicans by Democrats. The disease that has so corrupted our nation is on both sides of the aisle. Our politicians would rather lie to us even if the truth served their interests. All they care about is war. And they are taking us into a war now that will end in a nuclear conflagration. This is a proxy war. This is unbelievably suicidal. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. America has become especially effective at convincing the country to go to war based on false premise. It is something that we have done for a very long time. We use a variety of techniques to stir patriotism in the citizens. First, we create the impression that the aggressor is actually acting in self-defense, such as the case with the Syrian civil war. The aggressor in this case was not the Syrian government. The Syrian government didn't go off and say, you know what I think I'm going to do, which would be really a fun thing to do now, is I'm going to go kill a bunch of Sunni Muslims in Syria and to see what that does. I'm going to go do that tomorrow, and I bet that works out really cool. No, what happened is that the Saudi Arabians and the Qataris didn't like the growing influence of Iran, and they decided, as America did in Afghanistan using the Taliban and Al-Qaeda a number of years earlier, to create a proxy war, and they armed the Sunni jihadists that they sent into Syria to overthrow the Syrian government. This battle was started by the rebels. They were the aggressors. Assad is a disgusting human being. But Assad was defending the government of Syria. Well, that's the truth. So we've turned the aggressor into poor guys just fighting self-defense. Oh, there, you know, you've got AK-47s against tanks as they shoot down jet aircraft with surface-to-air missiles. The next is that you build a crusade mythology. You present the aggressors as fighting for the greater good. In this case, you've got Islamic jihadists recruited from around the Islamic world, all screaming Allahu Akbar, all engaged in suicide bombings and rape and the promotion of Sharia, mutilating their opponents, but you present them as fighting for the greater good, for democracy. Now, why don't you tell me where a group of armed jihadists has brought democracy to any country? Yeah, it worked out really well in Egypt, didn't it? Worked out really well in Tunisia. Worked out really well in Libya. Worked out really well for us in Iraq, didn't it? Worked out really well for us in Afghanistan. It has never happened. It will never happen. So it is absolute pure mythology that to give this notion that the jihadists are fighting for the greater good. They're fighting to establish an Islamic state in Iraq. I say, should be. Well, that's what they're doing in Iraq, you betcha. But they've already achieved it. What they're trying to do in Syria is to fight for the establishment of an Islamic state there, but one modeled after Sunni Islam as opposed to Shia Islam. And, of course, the next thing that you do is you dehumanize the chosen enemy. And so you make Assad, who is a very bad man, just as we did with Saddam Hussein, look like he is a goon worthy of death, and all of the goons that support him are also worthy of death. We dehumanize our enemy. Now, as it turns out, in the case of Syria, the secularists are actually better than the jihadists. That is not the way that it plays out on American television or by Americans. Now, about 2 weeks ago, I shared a story from the Washington Times. I'm going to go back over this again because we know for certain, the UN knows for certain, that it's the rebels who have deployed sarin gas in the Syrian war, not the Assad government. Here from the Washington Times. Testimony from victims strongly suggests that it was the rebels, not the Syrian government, that used sarin nerve gas during a recent incident in the Revolution Racked Nation, a senior UN diplomat said on Monday. This was 2 weeks ago. Maybe a little less than 2 weeks ago. Carla Del Ponte, a member of the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Syria, told Swiss television there were strong, concrete suspicions, but yet not incontrovertible proof, that the rebels seeking to oust Syrian strongman Bashar al-Assad had used the nerve agent. But she said that her panel had not yet seen any evidence of Syrian government forces using chemical weapons, according to the BBC, but she later added, the investigation was still ongoing. By the way, there is now video showing the rebels themselves loading rockets into field mortars with contrived warheads at the end of them that are cottage quality, that were homemade at the time that the rockets appeared, carrying the nerve agent in the communities surrounding Damascus. Now, we're going to return to this story and the complete report by the United Nations when Shattering Myths commences on this subject tomorrow.